You've probably been hearing the term sex addict, used to describe a person who can't seem to get enough sex and who takes great risks for sexual adventure. But is there really such a thing as sexual addiction? In an article in the current edition of The New Yorker, Dr. Abraham Verghese examines the controversy within the medical community. Dr. Verghese's interest was sparked by his former medical student and tennis partner, who was addicted to cocaine but claimed his larger problem was sexual addiction. Verghese is now writing a book about him and addiction within the medical community. Dr. Verghese is an infectious disease expert and a professor of medicine at the Texas Technical Health Science Center. He's also the author of a 1995 book called My Own Country, about treating people with AIDS in a small southern town. I asked him what sexual addiction is supposed to mean.
Well, the term is one that's very controversial. People who use the term sexual addiction feel that the behavior falls into the same rubric of other addictions, that it has the same features. In other words, this is a person who is preoccupied with sex, much the way a heroin addict or a cocaine addict might be preoccupied with a drug. They engage in a great deal of risk-taking in order to satisfy that craving. And then at the end of satisfying that craving, they experience remorse, guilt, and then the craving starts all over again. So in that sense, people who use the word sexual addiction feel that it falls into the model of other addictions because there are great parallels in the behavior in these conditions.
What is the controversy within the medical profession about this concept of sexual addiction?
I guess the controversy really rides on the fact that sexual behavior, sexual activity is so much a part of being human. So clearly we're talking about a spectrum of behavior that some people choose to view as abnormal or that the patient, a person himself, uses abnormal. I think the biggest difficulty with this is the fact that historically, sexual behavior, whether it's considered proper or improper, has been very much a function of the times. For example, in the earliest editions of the psychiatric manual called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, DSM-1, homosexuality was a disease, and so was nymphomania. And it's interesting that that reflected the sexual mores of that time. And then in the 70s, in the heyday of the sort of sexual freedom and sexual exploration, those diseases, quote-unquote, dropped out of the diagnostic manual, almost reflecting the fact that in that era, it would have been very difficult to call behavior that was previously called nymphomania a disease. And I think in a strange way, we've come back to a sort of Victorian ethic in the 80s and 90s, and once again, one finds sexual behavior being categorized as a disease. And we've seen this before. We've seen this with homosexuality. We've seen this with other behaviors that don't fit in with society, getting labeled with a disease label.
I think some people are skeptical of the idea of sexual addiction because they see it as a way of almost absolving yourself of responsibility for your sexual behavior, saying, well, you know, I'm doing this because, well, I'm ill. It's out of my control, therefore I'm not responsible if perhaps I've even taken advantage of people along the way.
That's right, and I think that's the biggest critique of sexual addiction is that the behavior is somehow out of one's control, that one cannot bring any sort of rational or cognitive affect to bear on that behavior. And I think that's the part that generates the most intense arguments between the psychologists on the one hand, who see it as a form of compulsion, if anything, and the addictionologists on the other hand, who see it in the same vein that they see heroin addiction and alcohol addiction as something that's literally a disease with a discrete mechanism and that is best treated by the 12-step sort of approach rather than by psychotherapy and trying to achieve insight and so on.
Maybe you could clarify a little bit the difference between a compulsion and an addiction.
Well, to use an example that's commonly used by psychologists, if I have a craving for chocolate and you happen to have some chocolate in the room where I'm sitting, I may succumb to that urge to eat the chocolate and I may feel out of control. That feeling out of control is not to be confused with actually being out of control. So the psychologists who believe in the compulsion would argue that people who label themselves sexual addicts are not really out of control, they just feel out of control. Whereas the addictionologists would argue that they really are out of control, that this is a disease that makes it impossible for them to resist the urge that they then satisfy.
Now, how is the concept of sexual addiction affecting your work as a doctor? You deal with infectious diseases. A lot of the people who you see have HIV. You write in the New Yorker piece that you believe that one out of every 10 patients that you see is there with a problem related to alcohol or drug addiction. Do you think about the possibility of sexual addiction in the patients that you treat?
You know, I don't. I'm tremendously impressed with the phenomenon of addiction. I think it's terribly important in medicine, and it's so ubiquitous that in a way we've almost lost sight of it. But yes, as I say in the piece in the New Yorker, it seems to me that directly or indirectly, a great majority of the patients I see have problems related to their addictions, and these tend to be very concrete addictions to alcohol, to heroin, to cocaine. But I've never, in the course of 15 years of practicing medicine, felt compelled to come up with the term sexual addiction. I still find it somewhat problematic. And I think that's because, unlike these other discrete addictions where there's a withdrawal, where there's clear tolerance to the drug, with sexual behavior, it seems to me that we're sort of taking one frame of reference applied to chemicals and then simply sticking it on a behavior and hoping it'll fit. But the great fear is that it's going to play into the hands of people, say, on the right, who already are sort of very vocal about pornography and its effects on society. So the label of disease to a sexual pattern of behavior plays into some of the very issues that have to do with personal freedom that we're all concerned about.
My guest is Dr. Abraham Verghese. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking to Dr. Abraham Verghese about his article in the current New Yorker about whether there's such a thing as sexual addiction. You report on the concept of sexual addiction for the current edition of the New Yorker. How divided is the medical profession now, do you think, about this concept? And what ripples is this making in the medical world now?
I think the mainstream medical profession, someone like myself, a general internist and an infectious disease person, is barely aware of this term. It's certainly caught on to a much greater degree in the lay press than it has infiltrated the textbooks. And I think that in the textbooks, the people are still a bit cautious about labeling it an addiction. And the latest DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Illness, again, stays away from labeling it an addiction. But curiously, the public seems to have quickly bought into this, and the term is being bandied around very, very commonly as though it's a clear-cut entity like cholera or typhoid.
When we talk about addiction, I guess we usually talk about a chemical addiction. You know, you're chemically addicted to alcohol, you're chemically addicted to cocaine. Is there a possible chemical component of a sexual addiction that's being discussed now?
Well, see, that's the wonderful million-dollar question. I think the reason we have so much controversy when we talk about sexual addiction is that unlike, say, cholera or typhoid, where we know exactly what the switch is at the very center of these illnesses, the whole realm of psychiatry is clouded in this sort of mystery. And with every passing year, we're learning more about the brain, and we're learning that there are discrete areas of the brain that, when affected, can result in very discrete behaviors. But I think we're many, many years away from actually getting to the very switch at the center of, say, compulsive sexual behavior, or even other diseases like, say, anxiety disorder or obsessive-compulsive disorders. And I think till you get to the switch at the center of things, you will have this argument between the sort of psychologists on the one hand and the addictionologists on the other hand and the neurobiologists on the other hand. I think it just reflects the fact that there's so much to know. What is very intriguing is the fact that there is a discrete area of the brain that produces its own opium-like chemicals that allow us to feel good, say, after a long run or after consummating a sexual act, and make us feel bad, for example, when we hurt someone or we steal. And ultimately, perhaps, but many, many decades from now, it might be possible to bring more accuracy to the sort of behavior, to typify it in the way we speak of good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. But till such time, I think we're left with this very confusing term and with the polar groups that argue over it.
Do you think it's conceivable that at some point neurobiologists will find that there is a chemical component that we don't know about yet to sexual desire, and that some people have more of it and others less of it, and that that explains what we might now refer to as a sexual addiction or sexual compulsion?
I think it's very possible that we'll get very close to finding the switch at the center of things. For the longest time, the territory of the software of the brain, all our thoughts and memories, has been the territory of the psychologists. But as we learn more and more about the brain, it becomes apparent that at some level, psychology is biology. That for every thought, for every memory, there will perhaps be a discrete chemical substrate that we can identify. But I think we're a long, long way away from that. And even when we get there, how are we going to take into account the whole range of behaviors that pass for normal in one society and yet are considered deviant in another society? I think that that kind of accuracy will never come and will always be left with a certain subjectivity to this very common and confusing disorder.
Dr. Abraham Verghese's article about sexual addiction is published in The Current New Yorker.